Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call, did write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of a snotty goster to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is the appeal to nature.
So the appeal to nature...
Before we do that, what is a snollygoster?
What, you'll have to look it up.
Oh, okay.
No, a snollygoster is an unscrupulous person who is kind of out for themselves, like often a politician. So
brilliant. Yeah. Such a lovely word.
It's a great word.
Like it ought to be out of the Muppets or...
Yeah.
Something like that. I can imagine it would be sort of. Oh yeah, weirdly, it's kind of orange, orange hair. Yeah,
yeah. So maybe it's a BFG kind of word.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, yeah. There we go.
Anyway. The appeal to nature is when people basically mistake something which is natural for something which is good, or make that kind of link and say that natural things are good and unnatural things are bad. Like because they're not natural, which is sometimes true, sometimes not true. It doesn't matter whether it's true or not. There was a paper in the journal Medical Decision Making from 2015.
Right.
They got participants to consider a hypothetical situation where they had to accept some medicine, basically. And they were asked to choose between a natural drug from a plant or one that had been created in a lab. And they were told that both were equally safe and equally effective. 79% of the participants chose the natural drug versus the synthetic drug.
Just purely on the basis that it was...
Yeah, just because it was, they said it was natural. The weirder thing is that when they changed the rules, they did two different studies. They said it was either less safe, the natural drug was less safe than the synthetic drug, or it was less effective than the synthetic drug.
Yeah.
Still... 20% of the participants selected the natural drug over the synthetic drug.
Yeah, and you know what? You know what? Those are the people that didn't get a vaccine. Those are the people that, don't take headache tablets.
Those headache tablets derived from the bark of willow tree.
From salicylic acid,
White. So, people will choose natural stuff over synthetic stuff. They will, and you know, this comes out in marketing, as we will discuss, purely because they feel like it's better. So our first Trump example this week is from a rally that he was doing outside of a big hangar. This was one of the ones with kind of Air Force One behind him, and he was up on a big stage, and he said this.
You know, I thought that was the sun in my eyes. It's these stupid lights, these people. I mean, what are they doing? Is there any way they can turn those lights down, folks? Crazy. You've got a thing called the sun. We like the sun better than the artificial nonsense.
To be honest, the main reason that I picked this example is, as a video producer, it pisses me off when people want to film outside and use the sun, use natural light instead of artificial lights. Because they think it's going to be better.
Exactly. And also that thing that he's been in telly, as he, you know, kind of loves telling us.
Uh-huh.
He kind of would. Does he not understand that? Do you not? What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Artificial lights are infinitely better in most cases. There are times when it's great to use natural light in filmmaking, video making. But the thing is, the sun isn't out all the time. There are clouds. Yeah. And
it doesn't keep still either.
Absolutely. It moves across the sky. You can't decide what is going to be in the background because you have to shoot depending on where the sun is and what. It's really annoying that people, clients regularly say, oh, can't we just do this outside? No, I can control my lights. I can turn them up or down. I can angle them. I can move them backwards and forwards.
I can keep them in the same place.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Standing in for the sun without it moving through a window.
Yeah, they do the same job. They do they provide light and I don't need to rely on bouncing that light. I can use two lights.
Yeah.
So...
And also the other thing that in that clip that really annoys me is when he says, can we just get them to turn the lights down? And everybody cheers. You go, what? Yeah. Really? Well, if they did, you wouldn't be able to see him because he's like in a massive shadow in the hangar. And you just think, well, yeah, but as soon as the sun goes behind that hangar, you've had it. And we know you're going to rabbit on for 2 hours. Yeah. You're just going to disappear. And
yeah, generally speaking, there's a reason when people are setting up an arena or a stage why people use lights. It's not just for their health. When the sunlight is very bright and it isn't in the right place or casting the right kind of light over the person that you're filming, often you need to use more lights to fill in that those shadows, because the shadows that are cast by the sun are extremely harsh. People don't understand, and it annoys me. Moving on from our just personal annoyance.
But ultimately, the thing is, just because it's the sun doesn't make it good.
Yeah, just because the lights are artificial doesn't make them bad. Yeah, absolutely. Bad.
Quite. Yeah.
So our second example is actually from Mike Pence, and this was an op-ed that he wrote back when he was, I think, running for Congress or a new congressperson in 2001 about climate change. He said, here's the deal. Environmentalists claim that certain greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide are mucking up the atmosphere and causing the Earth to gradually warm. Despite the fact that CO2 is a naturally occurring phenomenon in nature, the Greenpeace folks wants to blame it all on coal, another natural mineral, and certain evil coal-burning power plants. The theory is, get rid of the evil coal-burning plants and we save the planet from imminent doom. Sorry, I feel like I put too much kind of life and performance into Mike Pence. But,
For the listeners' benefit, we had lost them at 7 minutes in, everyone would be asleep.
He's saying that CO2, how can CO2 be bad? It's completely natural. How can coal be bad? That's a natural mineral.
And how is it? Yeah, I'm thinking, as soon as he said that, I'm thinking cyanide naturally occurs as well.
It doesn't take long to come up with lots of bad natural things.
No.
Arsenic, snakes,
lions.
Yeah, most of Australia. It's just like everything wants to kill you. It's not automatically good.
Quite. And you think, well, CO2 is the problem. That's the problem. And it happened, that it happens naturally, has happened before during kind of global warming events, even before humans existed.
Yeah.
That was a happening.
Absolutely. And that, when climate change skeptics say, oh, it's a natural phenomenon, actually the cooling and warming cycles. And that is true. That doesn't mean that this time it is due to nature. And also, even if it was, even if what we were seeing was due to nature, it would still be bad if it ultimately led to a world where we can't survive.
Well, bad for us.
Bad for us, absolutely. Not bad for the planet. Planet's fine. Just for humans.
And if we're pumping an undue amount of natural stuff into the atmosphere, which causes a greenhouse effect,
So our third example is from Senator Rand Paul, who tweeted, and this is back in November 2020, so these numbers may have been true-ish, or the best numbers they had at that time. He said, great news, Pfizer vaccine 90% effective, Moderna vaccine 94.5% effective, naturally acquired COVID-19 99.9982% effective. And then he explained, actually, which is really good that he explained where that number came from, estimating 200 reinfections out of 11 million Americans, which is likely an overestimation of actual reinfections. Realistically, it's actually likely a massive underestimation of actual reinfections, because there are many infections which are not found because there are no symptoms and people weren't at that time getting regular tests and all that kind of stuff. So almost certainly masses more reinfections than his estimate of 200. But the point is, the naturally acquired COVID-19, or the natural immunity that you get from getting COVID, isn't more effective than vaccines, based on the studies that have been done on that. But even if it was, to get that immunity, you have to have survived COVID.
Exactly. He's kind of glossing over that.
So you have to get a potentially deadly disease.
So just saying, well, it's natural. Absolutely. It's a good thing. It's natural. It's fine. So I was looking up about, you know, what the argument that people use that the vaccine is synthetic and therefore not a good thing. And what I could find is what the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, for example, are messenger RNA, mRNA. So the mRNA technology was worked out in the 70s, where they would just put the bit of the stuff that is going to trigger your immune response. They just kind of create that bit rather than give you the whole thing. Can you imagine? You know, well, let's have a vaccine. Well, okay, so what are we going to do? Well, what we're going to do is we're going to get the phlegm from a COVID sufferer, and then we're just going to suck it into a tube and then give you that. So what, you're actually going to give me COVID? Yeah, that's I mean, people would just go, well, I'm not having that because I might as well just get COVID. Well, yeah, effectively, you are getting COVID.
I mean, that's what the whole measles parties thing is all about.
Refusing the
measles vaccinations, but trying to get their kids infected with measles.
Well, that was a thing when I was little. You know, this was back before the invention of medicine. There were parties like that where you'd go round kids' house, you go, oh, you've got chicken pox. Yeah, right, we're coming round.
Edward Jenner's kid's birthday party.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You go, why is there a cow in the back garden? Yeah, never mind. It's quite pustular. Yeah, no, it's fine. Don't look at these, it smells of it. Yeah. I always conflate that with the memory told to me by my mum when people got whooping cough. They would go and stand the kids, not people, kids got whooping cough. The parents would take the kids out and stand them by piles of tarmac where they're filling the road in order to kind of breathe in the tar vapour. Yeah.
Famously good for your lungs.
Famously good for your lungs. So, well, if you're going to cough, you might as well have a decent cough.
I'll give you something to cough about.
Exactly. Yeah. If you don't stop coughing, I'll give you something to cough about. Yeah, and that entire generation all became miners. Yeah, and worked with evil coal mines. But anyway, yeah. So this article is arguing why synthetic is okay, and it's talking about the fact that it's not okay. It comes from a concept in the 19th century which was about vitalism. So vitalism espouses that organic materials can't be created from inorganic matter. But we know now that that's not the case. And the classic experiment was reported by Friedrich Wöhler, no relation to Jacob Wöhler, Friedrich Wöhler, who synthesized urea, the molecule produced in urine, by heating a chemical called ammonium cyanurate. The synthetic urea was identical to natural urea, even though the synthetic method was nothing like the biological production of urea. He didn't just sit about and drink a lot and then collect whatever came in. No, he heated up a chemical. And for me, there's something about Trump in there, you know, that he actually produces gallons of synthetic piss when he speaks. If only he worked with bullshit. So, like vitamin C, for instance, that's what intrigued me about that experiment that you mentioned about the synthetic versus the natural. Vitamin C, if you get those effervescent vitamin C tablets, it's man-made vitamin C. It's not, they don't squeeze a million oranges and then, you know, dry it and compact it into, that would be very labor intensive.
The chemical is created in a lab
but it's exactly the same.
Yeah,
it's identical, so it does exactly the same thing. And the fact that you can manufacture that manufacture molecules to the extent that you can patent them, you know, that seems somehow to frighten the natural lobby. Certainly frightens the, you know, the anti-vaxxers of my acquaintance, that there's something
unnatural.
Yeah, and therefore bad that, about that. Yeah, I mean, to the extent that we're not allowed to use the microwave, you know, because it's synthetic, you know. It's a, but a microwave just produces the active ingredient that fire does, which is basically to vibrate at high speed water molecules in food, which is what makes stuff hot. You know, that's what cooking is. Yeah. So the microwave just cuts out all of the having to, you know, chop down trees and squash them into coal and then set up a fire and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that works.
No. If you've ever cooked over an open fire, not how it works, kids. Yeah. My favourite microwave thing is Christmas pudding. So, and all the purists now listen, not our audience, obviously, are all going, oh, no, you've got to steam that for 4 years prior to, you know, you've got to know when
you're specifically British purists.
Yeah, who are sucking their teeth going, ooh, dear, no, you need a muslin cloth. See, it needs to sit over the steam. But you can microwave it in 3 minutes.
Whereas, I don't think I'll be upsetting too many Americans to say that often, so if they want to make a cup of tea, they will microwave a mug of water and put a tea bag in it, which is, to our British ears, utterly unacceptable.
I am now doing the Edvard Munch emoji right now. Yeah.
And yet, I know. Not because it's unnatural, though. Not because microwaves are less natural than kettles.
Exactly. But yeah.
Just because there is an acceptable order of things, and that's not right.
It's just not right. It's just wrong. I know. Well, there you go. That's our inbuilt naturalistic fallacy going on.
Cognitive bias of Britishness.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
So the example I've got is going back to the good old days of before we didn't know that our government didn't know how to deal with COVID. And so I kind of, this one's sort of revealed recently again by Dominic Cummings, you know, liars, lying about liars, not telling the truth. Because apparently Johnson did originally entertain notions of a natural herd immunity as a response to COVID-19. And he was taken to task on the blisteringly harsh televised holding leaders to account environment that is This Morning with Philip and Holly. On my birthday last year, on March 5th, 2020, he said this.
That's where a lot of the debate has been. And one of the theories is that, you know, perhaps you could sort of take it on the chin, take it all in one go and allow the disease, as it were, to move through the population. Without really taking as many draconian measures, I think we need to strike a balance. I think it's very important. We've got a fantastic NHS. We'll give them all the support that they need. We'll make sure that they have all the preparations, all the kit that they need for us to get through it. But I think it would be better if we take all the measures that we can now just to, you know, to stop the peak of the disease being as difficult for the NHS as it might be. I think there are things that we may be able to do.
So basically he's kind of saying that taking any measures to prevent the disease ripping through the population would be draconian, and actually the issue is we've got to support the NHS. Never mind the lives, what we've got to do is make it not difficult for the NHS. So it's kind of, you know, what was terrifying also is that they didn't do any of those things. And anyway.
Yeah,
and
they absolutely did not give the NHS all of the preparations and all of the kit they needed at all.
No, nor did they stop the peak of the disease. And, you know, all those kind of things that one might expect as a natural response to a pandemic. So anyway, where's the fallacy? Well, in the way that Dominic Cummings defined it, summarised it, he said basically what they'd agreed was herd immunity, protect the economy, and if that means some pensioners die, too bad. And that theory has its roots in an appeal to nature, and it comes from the argument that were kind of made by a guy called Herbert Spencer, who was a contemporary of Darwin, In the 1850s, he wrote a somewhat perverse justification of poverty and inequality in 19th century Britain, and he argued that under the natural order of things, society is constantly excreting its unhealthy, imbecile, slow, vacillating, faithless members through what he describes as a purifying process. So there's some sense in that modern herd immunity belief that actually it's a natural order of things, that society and life just does away with the idiots and the poor,
the sick and old are going to die.
Yeah, and the vacillating, faithless, interesting members. I said the members are faithless, quavering in their boots. But also it's a justification for not doing anything for the poor, and it's not that different from, okay, well, you know, people are going to die. That's just what happens. We can't help that. So that's it's what nature does. So it's a justification of awful divide and inequality by just going, oh, yeah, no, it's just natural.
And, I mean, it is amazing in today's world to think back to that being an acceptable opinion. Mm. But it's absolutely the opinion some people had at the beginning of this. No question about it. I have heard people say, you know, well, people are going to die. You know, we're all going to die eventually.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We should just do it. We should just let it happen.
Yes, that view is exactly that. And our friend of the show, Boris backing Katie Hopkins, that Twitter banned Aussie deported fascistic supporter of anything self-promotingly right wing, inevitably tweeted on March 13th, 2020, that coronavirus is a team sport. Get it, get immunity, feel better, the herd triumphs, do not fear death, everyone has an end. Which basically says it's only natural, take one for the team, you're all going to die, stop thinking of yourself, do it for the rest of us. Which is ironically something that she never does. And I also think we discussed in the McNamara fallacy episode, which looked at how measuring COVID had changed. So there's something in the way that the number of cases is subject to this fallacy as well. Because I think the numbers of cases have been normalized. This is normal, so it's no longer bad. It's because it's no longer abnormal. It's just what naturally happens. Viruses arrive, people get sick, numbers go up, happens all the time. It's normal, it's nature. And that which is enabled them to focus on the number of deaths, and even the number of deaths, that the number of deaths is lower, and that's good, somehow is normalized as a naturally occurring thing. Yeah, there'll be deaths, but now there's fewer of them. The numbers have gone down as a natural progression from the success of the vaccine. So look at that, and not the fact that there are still deaths, which actually, if you don't look at it like that, they're avoidable deaths from a virus that we could have been more protected against more effectively, more quickly, and more thoroughly.
Find me in a logic class. Mother Nature's wrong. See how crazy fallacies have made it all become. Let's go finding fallacy in the wild.
Beatles there, of course, with Mother Nature's Son. What more appropriate track?
And in the fallacy in the wild, we like to talk about the fallacy of the week from a non-political perspective, and our first example this week comes from Monty Python, and this is the Crunchy Frog sketch.
Yay!
Next we have number 4. Crunchy Frog.
Ah, yes.
Am I right in thinking there's a real frog in here?
Yes, a little one.
What sort of frog?
A dead frog.
Is it cooked?
No.
What, a raw frog?
We use only the finest baby frogs, dew-picked and flown from Iraq, cleansed in the finest quality spring water, lightly killed, and then sealed in a succulent Swiss quintuple smooth triple cream milk chocolate envelope and lovingly frosted with glucose.
This is Mayfield, still a frog.
Oh, what else?
Well, don't you even take the bones out?
If we took the bones out, it wouldn't be crunchy, would it?
Superintendent Parrot ate one of those.
Excuse me a moment. It says crunchy frog quite clearly.
Well, the superintendent thought it was an almond whirl. People won't expect there to be a frog in there. They're bound to think it's some form of mock frog.
Mock frog? We use no artificial preservatives or additives of any kind.
Nevertheless, I must warn you that in future you should delete the words crunchy frog and replace them with the legend crunchy, raw, unboned, real dead frog if you want to avoid prosecution.
Absolutely brilliant. So,
so good. That, yeah, that natural things could be so wrong. That's the thing. And he goes, is it a real frog? Yeah, of course it is. It's a mock
no
frog.
Artificial ingredients of any kind. So, yes, the argument from many companies that they use no artificial ingredients is a huge selling point. Based on exactly what we've been saying and what I said at the beginning of people kind of preferring the idea of natural stuff. The fact is artificial isn't always bad and natural isn't always good. And so that isn't, you know, in this case, you get a real frog in your chocolates, lightly killed. It's just because it's natural doesn't mean it's what you want to eat.
Should leave the bones in it. Well, of course we leave the bones in it. We'll be crunchy otherwise.
And this sketch, actually, although we call it Crunchy Frog, is technically it's called the Trading Standards sketch.
Oh, okay.
Because these police are enforcing what we have in the UK, which is trading standards laws, where you have to be honest about what you're selling. We also have a thing called the Advertising Standards Authority, which checks that things that are being advertised are being advertised truthfully. And in 2008, there was an advert from Miracle-Gro, the fertiliser people, who claimed that their new organic compost was 100% chemical-free.
Right.
Which would mean they
what
weren't
was it
selling
made
anything.
Of then?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. What was it made of? Physics? Yeah. Just the concept of art. Yeah.
Yeah. And chemical-free is a thing you will see on baby clothes, on cosmetics, and it's never, ever true. And there was a complaint to the Advertising Standards Authority, but they allowed this advert to continue.
Right.
They said at the time, when there's a colloquial understanding of a word, we can take this into account when reaching our decision. In this case, we believe that most viewers are likely to understand the term organic as meaning no man-made chemicals have been used to manufacture or are present in this product. For this reason, we believe most viewers are unlikely to be misled by the claim. Which a lot of people disagreed with, and I disagree with, because... Yes, it's a bit pedantic to say chemicals are
made of chemicals.
What everything is made of. Therefore, you can't have chemical-free fertilizer.
Yeah.
But also allowing this kind of thing to continue does continue to promote the fear of synthetic chemicals.
Yeah.
And there isn't a need to be afraid of them per se. That's not to say all synthetic chemicals are fine. And it's definitely not true to think all natural chemicals are fine. But they're all chemicals.
Exactly, yeah, whether they're made of frog or not.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So our second example is from Jurassic Park.
As soon as you put this one in, I knew it was going to be this bit.
Yeah.
It's my favourite bit. And this is my Jeff Goldblum impression is based on his hand acting in this scene.
Yeah. So this is where Richard Attenborough is basically trying to get some support for having brought dinosaurs back to life, spoiler. And the scientists that he's collected are not on board with it.
Our scientists have done things which nobody's ever done before.
Yeah, but your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could, they didn't stop to think if they should.
Condors. Condors are on the verge of extinction. If I was to create a flock of condors on this island, you wouldn't have anything to say.
No, hold on. This isn't some species that was obliterated by deforestation or the building of a dam. Dinosaurs had their shot, and nature selected them for extinction.
Apart from glossing over the fact that, actually, if you brought condors back, They wouldn't go rampaging through the city and eat you.
Well, that none of that's happened yet. So
another spoiler.
So they're not. They're not using the "this is incredibly dangerous" argument, and that's kind of my point. There's plenty of good reasons not to bring apex predators back to life.
Yeah, yeah.
But the fact that nature created a meteor that wiped out the dinosaurs is not a good reason. They didn't die out because they were selected against. It wasn't natural selection. Yeah. Nature didn't select against them. It was it was an extinction level event. It was rocks flying about space. If the meteor hadn't hit, who knows how long they would have lasted and survived and thrived and done other stuff. They weren't a species that had their shot and died out because they weren't fit for the environment.
Yep.
And even if they were, I still don't think that's a good argument. The argument one of the main arguments for not bringing dinosaurs back is they'll eat us all.
Yeah, but probably the very first one. Yeah, but not much of a scientist, old Goldblum, is he? I mean, he's kind of, well, actually, isn't he?
He's a chaos theorist, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you kind of think, well, even if you're a chaos theorist, you would go, can you imagine what chaos would ensue if you brought back 60-foot dire apex predators?
But the others
that are used to eating meat.
I mean, Laura Dern is a botanist, isn't she? And she's saying, but her main complaint is that they don't know what they're doing, the people who've kind of created Jurassic Park, because they've got plants in the building that are toxic, they've chosen them because they look nice. And Sam Neill, the paleontologist, is saying, well, we just don't know what will happen if you put humans and dinosaurs together, because he hasn't got much of an imagination.
Yeah. So as scientists go, he kind of picked the right people, really, didn't he, Attenborough? Because they didn't have any... They've got specious arguments at best. You know, they've all, thankfully, as far as he's concerned, he could distract them with the condor argument. Mm-hmm. You know, thankfully, they've none of them spotted the fact that unleashing 60-foot apex predators that at the height of evolution, after 360 million years of evolution, is a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's kind of said that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they just go, oh, you've got a T-Rex. Oh, yeah, did I not mention that? No, you fucking didn't. No. You know, and even when he does mention it, they're delighted. They don't go, what the fuck have you done? You idiot. You get me off the island now. No. They stand there and go, oh, yeah, brontosauruses. Mm. Look at that. Marvellous. Mm. Look how these gallimimus are running. Why do you think that is? Because there's a fucking Tyrannosaurus coming at you. Oh, my God. Yeah. So, yeah. Drive a bit faster. Yeah. Yeah.
So, the nature argument is among the weaker of their arguments of their against arguments. Doing this.
Amongst several other really bad arguments. About the toxicity of indoor plants. Yeah.
And so next I've got a couple of clips from different Parks and Recreation episodes. Yay. The first is from the episode Sweetums, where Anne is trying to tell everyone that the energy bars that Sweetums, the sweet people, are putting out there, Nutri-Yum, are not good for them because they're basically pure corn, high fructose corn syrup. And there's a town meeting where one of the inhabitants of the town says this.
What's so bad about corn syrup? It's natural. Corn's a fruit. Syrup comes from a bush.
Oh, boy.
I think we ought to throw those bars out and eat ham and mayonnaise sandwiches.
That's not a good idea.
Ham and mayonnaise. It's
not, no.
Ham and mayonnaise.
No.
Ham and mayonnaise.
Bunch of random non-sequiturs.
So,
spoiler alert, corn isn't a fruit.
Actually, technically, corn is a fruit.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
But you still shouldn't put it in a fruit salad.
But the seeds are on the outside.
Yeah, but technically a fruit is a thing that we eat with the seeds, that has seeds and we eat the whole thing.
It's
a specific kind of fruit. I forget the botanical name for it. Essentially,
grass.
It's a grain. And grains are fruits because they're just less fleshy
ones. They're the fruiting bodies of grass. Yeah.
Syrup comes from a bush. Not so sure about that one. But but this is corn syrup, so it comes presumably from the corn.
Yeah.
But yeah, the fact that it's natural doesn't mean it's good for you. Doesn't mean that stuff that is made with basically just corn syrup isn't unhealthy.
Nor does it explain why they rejected that for ham and mayonnaise.
Yeah. Back at Parks and Rec, this is when Ron is trying to find a celebrity to help with his new business that he's gone into with Tom. They've gone to a kind of new age guru type woman.
So you've had soy milk and almond milk. Now try the hottest new craze, beef milk. It's like almond milk that's been squeezed through tiny holes in living cows.
Milk.
No. Milk costs $3 a gallon. Annabelle's authentic hand-strained teat-to-table beef milk? That costs $60 a gallon.
Yeah, and there's a wait list.
Yeah, that's fucking milk.
Yeah.
So yeah, this character, Annabelle Porter, and her business, Bloosh, is directly based on Gwyneth Paltrow and Goop. And it is about the kind of fetishization of natural stuff and this kind of attempt to repackage nature and stuff like that and say, look how wonderfully natural this stuff is.
Yeah. And if you can add more things like hand strain.
And this kind of repackaging is absolutely relying on this appeal to nature and the the need that people have to feel that this stuff is... They're escaping the kind of processed, synthetic world that, you know, normal shops try and sell you.
Yeah.
So instead you should buy a perfectly natural candle that smells like a vagina.
Yeah, exactly. Like all candles naturally ought to, if they weren't infused with, you know, artificial things like the smell of roses. Yeah. There was a phenomena in that most natural of coffee places, Shoreditch in London, which is, you know, so hipster it hurts, that there was one place that would give you coffee and it was so artisanal and hand strained that they just gave you your own little cafetiere and some beans and some water and you made it yourself. And they're doing
constructed coffee.
And you're paying more and more stuff for it. Yeah. My example for the fallacy in the wild was from the Urban 75 message board, where people are actually just trolling the whole 5G conspiracy theorists, but also poking fun at this idea of what's natural and what's not. And they're talking about some theory that's going around that there's a smog has descended on somewhere or other, and it's been produced by the 5G masts, and somebody's gone, I'll tell you that fog has been generated from 5G masts, and that includes COVID mist. And then someone replied, said, yeah, that fog definitely looks unnatural, not like the 3G fog that we had in my day. So which kind of perfectly sums it up. So you're just kind of comparing two completely unnatural phenomena, and you go, nah, it's not natural.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody. As well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for fake news, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
You see, I'm maintaining that the whole notion of winners and losers is an artificial construct. See, there's nothing natural about it. The world is a place of peacefully occurring collaboration between flora and fauna and predator and prey. So I reject your so-called game as an aberration. It's wrong and it shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah. So the theme this week is kind of, it's quite a loose one, to be honest.
Well, hang on. There's nothing tight and specific about what Trump says at any point.
But this is just times when during a rant, he's at some point said, what's going on? As if he had a moment of clarity, but
he kind of woke up. The drugs wore off for a moment, and he's looking and going, what's going on? Why am I wearing this ridiculous hairpiece? Who am I? What? Why are my pants on backwards?
This is not my beautiful house. Anyway.
How did I get
here? So, statement number one. They said my poll numbers are very bad in Europe. I said they should be. No, seriously. They said when he started off, he had 87%. That means you could be the king of any country. Now they, because I'm representing our country, I'm not representing those countries. You know, one of those things. True. It's true. They said his poll numbers have tanked. And I said, oh, damn it. What's going on? Damn it. And then I said, oh, it's in Europe. That's okay.
It sounds like it's half a phone conversation we're listening in on. You know, it's like a Stan Freeberg thing from the 50s where he would do comedy sketches when you only get to hear his half of the conversation. And it's going, yeah, what? Yeah, true. They said, what? Yes, what?
Statement
okay.
number two.
Okay.
This is towards the beginning of COVID. He said, they show me this graph and everything's looking beautiful. And then there's this spike, this big spike, like right out of nowhere. And I say, what's going on? And by the way, this is right in the middle of, we've got the biggest economy in the history of the world, right? And black unemployment is doing terrifically. And we've got this spike and it's the testing. There's the thing in Denver and we're looking at that very strongly, but really it's the testing.
Okay. That bit about where he goes, and it's right in the middle of, and we've got the biggest economy in the world. It's just like Boris saying, yeah, we should, and the NHS, we're going to give them all that they need. Yeah, moments where they kind of, it rushes in and he's going, oh my God, what am I doing? Yeah.
And statement number three, this was at a social media summit. He said, I notice things happening when I put out something, a good one that people like, right? A good tweet, it goes up. It used to go up. It would say 7,000, 7,008, 7,017, 7,024, 7,032, 7,044, right? Now it goes 7,000, 7,008, 6,998. Then they go 7,009, 6,074. I say, what is going on? It never did that before. It goes up and then they take it down. Then it goes up. I'd never had that. Does anyone know what I'm talking about with this?
Oh, I so want that one to be real. Right. Yeah. Does that? No, no. Nobody knows that. Okay. So. All right then. Well, you see, the one with Denver, there's this thing in Denver we're looking at very strongly. That's a very Trump thing to say, which means it's a very Trump thing to say. So you might have picked up on that over the years we've been doing this and written that in. Okay. There's this big, beautiful spike. Okay. Mm-hmm. King of any country. See, I can't like that one. I'm representing our country, not representing those countries. You know, one of those things. It's got enough dead ends to real, and I really want the numbers one to be real. So, and yeah, so based on nothing at all other than it feels natural. Okay, but I might reject the number one because that doesn't feel natural. I think number two is the one that you made up.
Okay, out of the other two, which are you more convinced by?
More convinced by the polls in Europe.
Okay.
Number one.
So, number one is?
Yeah.
Real.
They said my poll numbers are very bad in Europe. I said they should be. No, seriously. They said when he started off, he had 87%. That means you can be the king of any country. Now they're ching because I'm representing our country. I'm not representing those countries. You know, one of those things. So. It's true. They said his poll numbers have tanked. And I said, oh, damn it. What's going on? Damn it. Then I said, oh, it's in Europe. That's okay.
He's making joke-shaped comments. Uh-huh. Like that. They took my polls a number very bad in Europe. I said they should be. No, seriously.
Seriously, folks.
Yeah.
Take my wife.
Yeah. 87%. Yeah, when people poll 87%, that means you could be king of any country, because that's how kings work.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
In countries, you vote them in, for one. And
also, barely needs saying, but at no point has he ever polled at 87% anywhere other than specifically the Republican membership who already agree with him. That portion of the Republicans. At the beginning of Obama, by the way, in end of 2016, this is confidence in the US president across Europe.
Yeah.
The highest was Netherlands, 92%, 2016.
Wow.
UK, 79%, 2016. France, 84%, Germany, 86%, and so on. That was Obama. Soon as Trump got in, the absolute highest is Hungary with 29%. Yeah.
And Hungary, a proper, socialist.
Yeah, absolutely. Italy, 25%.
They like the fascists. Hungary.
Poland, 23%. Yeah. United Kingdom, 22%. Greece, 19%. France, 14%. Sweden, 10%. Spain, 7%. That was his approval rating. Wow. Spain never went above 7%.
So when he said, when he started off, he had 87%. Is he talking about Obama?
He's just lying. He's just...
It's just, well, he's not even... Yeah, he's saying that they said when he started off. So even the people that he's saying...
He didn't have 87% in the US. I mean, he never was above 50%, ever.
No. But that bit, because they said when he started off, so he's conjuring up these mythical people. And then the mythical people are talking about him in the third person.
Yeah.
Rather than me.
This is just a conversation he's overheard that they were saying his poll numbers have gone down.
Yeah. And he's going, what's going on? They go, no, actually, it's nothing to do with you.
We're not talking about you.
Yeah, not talking about you. No, because yours are tanked anyway. They've never gone up. They can't, not getting positive figures. We can't even. Yeah.
So not how kings work, and also not how anything works.
No. Okay.
So you also think that number three is real? And number three...
I do, yeah.
...is...
Yeah.
...real.
I notice things happening when I put out something, a good one, that people like, right? Good tweet. It goes up. It used to go up. It would say 7,000, 7,008, 7,017, 7,024, 7,032, 7,044... Right? Now it goes 7,000, 7,008, 6,998. Then they go 7,009, 6,074. I said, what's going on? No, it never did that before. It goes up, and then they take it down, then it goes up. I'd never had that. Does anyone know what I'm talking about with this?
No, nobody knows what the fuck you're talking about.
He's like, he sounds like is a bingo caller on acid. It used to go up. Well, it didn't go up much.
Yeah. The thing is, what you've got to remember is that is him sitting after he's done a tweet that he's particularly proud of, just hitting refresh every couple of seconds.
Yeah, it's going 7,000.
It's got 7,000 likes now. 7,008 likes now. 7,017 likes now.
Yeah. And the fact that he defines a good one, it's a good one, is the ones that people like. Yeah. I mean, none of them were good. A good tweet, it goes up. You used to go. It's like when you're trying to buy, you're watching an auction on eBay and they're going, oh no, we've got the threat, keep refreshing.
He also claimed just before that he used to get 100,000 new followers in a very short period of time, and now it takes 10 times that. That very 10 very short periods of time.
10 times very short periods of time. Yeah. How short? What are we talking? Centuries here? Geological time span? What?
Which means that number two was fake news, as you surmised. That was largely made up.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, it was made up. There was a thing in Denver, which was an outbreak at a meat processing plant, but that was kind of just the inspiration for that, really. So you are now on 35 out of 72, Which means if you get the next two right, you'll be on 50%.
Oh,
so
there you are. See, that's, to shoot just, for that's not natural.
No, I don't think it's natural. Right, not to bring the mood down, but holy fuck.
Yeah.
This is the part of the show that this week at least is called Reproductive Rights Are Not a Logical Fallacy, because Texas is now Gilead. And everything is shit.
Yeah.
And there's no realistic way out.
And 1984 as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, with... So anyway, to begin at the beginning.
Yes. So the Texas legislature, obviously Republican, put forward a bill in May called SB8, which restricts abortions to only if there isn't a what they call a fetal heartbeat, which isn't really a heartbeat as such, because the fetus at 6 weeks, essentially, when you can first hear some kind of rhythm, doesn't have a heart as such. The fetus at that point is approximately 5 millimeters long and...
like a jelly baby.
No way smaller than a jelly baby. Pomegranate seed, that kind of size.
Bloody hell.
And it's the very, very, very beginning of when you might be able to hear not even necessarily through the belly, but with a kind of transvaginal ultrasound kind of situation, you might be able to detect a heartbeat. And they decided that that should be the point at which people who are pregnant are no longer allowed to opt for an abortion, which is completely unconstitutional because of Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey, and the rights enshrined in the Constitution for you. And in I think it was Casey that specified, it was the 14th Amendment, the right to liberty, essentially, that allows women to, prior to kind of the viability of the fetus, make that decision for themselves, essentially, with no undue burden placed upon them by the state.
Yeah.
So Texas introduced this bill, and it was challenged in court, and it was overturned by the district court in Texas, and then it was appealed up to the Fifth Circuit, who overturned the appeal and kind of essentially said that the bill could the law could go ahead. Then it was appealed to the Supreme Court, who sat on it, did nothing, waited for it to go into effect, and then, using what is kind of sometimes called the shadow docket, put out a ruling that is not based on any briefings or evidence or citations particularly, or any real analysis of the legal aspects of it, saying that they would not enjoin this law from going ahead. And there's, you know, you can make all the challenges you want, but while those challenges are happening through the various courts, the district courts and so on, this law can take effect, which is unbelievable, because it is unquestionably unconstitutional. There isn't any real doubt about that at all. Let's kind of go back to basics. Roe v. Wade, 1973, said that the state cannot intervene basically at all on the mother's right to choose to have an abortion in the first trimester. Second trimester, the state can put restrictions in place but can't prohibit anything. Third trimester, the state can do whatever they want.
Right.
In the 90s, when the court had got a bit more conservative, in, I think it was Pennsylvania, there was a case, Planned Parenthood versus Casey, where the hope was, from the kind of conservative side, that they could get the court to overrule Roe v. Wade at that point, because the court had become more conservative and therefore more likely to do that. Planned Parenthood versus Casey affirmed Roe v. Wade, but changed the rules from the trimester system to viability, and said once the fetus is viable, you cannot have an abortion, or the state can prohibit you, but pre-viability, the state can only restrict but can't prohibit, and those restrictions cannot place an undue burden on the mother.
Right.
So clearly the state cannot prohibit abortions at the point where a fetal heartbeat is detected, at what is essentially around the 6 week mark.
Yeah.
That's absolutely clear. So Texas, in their infinite wisdom, when writing SB 8, came up with a system where the state doesn't enforce this law.
Right.
What happens instead
is they
make it legal for any nutter to sue anyone who is involved in either providing that abortion, you know, doing the procedure themselves, or anyone who facilitates that process.
Yeah.
And in a very weird bit that I still haven't got my head around at all, anyone who intends to do that.
Yeah. I mean, how do you measure intent?
I absolutely don't know how that is enforceable at all.
And isn't there like a cash reward as well?
Well, essentially, yeah. So this these individuals, whoever chooses to sue, they can't sue the woman or the pregnant person. It's constantly woman in the law because it's Texas, but trans men can get pregnant and have abortions.
Yeah.
So the pregnant person isn't getting sued. It's the person who is doing the procedure or anyone who facilitates it, even from the process of kind of paying or giving them a lift to the clinic or anything. You know, the nurse who books her in or anyone who provides the pregnant person with material to give them information about it, all of that stuff. Those people can all be sued. And the amount is not less than $10,000. So it could be more. If a judge chooses, they can say that the award that the person who can just be completely unconnected to this.
Yeah. Just anyone. Anyone who, it's just...
Anyone who chooses to hang around an abortion clinic waiting for someone they reckon is probably more than 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So they can get more than 10,000 or 10,000 minimum, plus their court costs if they win.
Wow.
The defendant, essentially, the person who is being sued, if they win, they don't get their court costs paid. They still have to pay their court costs, so they pay either way. So it's absolutely incentivizing people to just try this on.
Grasp people up. Yeah.
It is quite unbelievable. It's like a bounty hunter system where anyone is deputized to enforce this law. And it's crazy.
And, you know, and also the other thing is that at 6 weeks or whatever, you know, whatever the rice grain is about the time when you realize that you might be pregnant.
It's absolutely one of the earliest part of the range.
Might have missed a period, you know, is that what that is?
The
vast
majority of people are not going to know they're pregnant at that point.
Wow.
It's certainly at the kind of lower range of when you can take a pregnancy test and get a positive result if you're pregnant. You know, your HCG levels are not going to be that elevated by that point.
Mm.
In fact, I think it's there's 7 or 8 weeks is the first point at which they say you can really make an appointment and go and have a, you know, prenatal check.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, they don't say it's 6 weeks. They say it's at the point of the detection of the heartbeat. But ultimately, it's being talked about as around 6 weeks. But realistically, it's a ban on abortion. Because, for the vast majority of people, they aren't going to know or be able to know by that point. And even if they know within, 4 or 5 weeks, you've still got to make an appointment. Texas has a law where there's a mandatory 24-hour waiting period anyway, so you can't get immediately. So you have to wait. You have to go through various hoops to get things done, and you can't. You know, you're not going to necessarily be able to get an appointment that day. They have other laws about the fact that abortion clinics have to kind of have the same facilities as a level one trauma center, so that to cut down the number of providers that are available. So a lot of people. Texas is huge. It's the same size as France.
Yeah.
So,
and
that I'm not being hyperbolic. It literally is.
Yeah.
And there aren't that many facilities that have the ability to perform abortions in the first place. So people have to travel. Obviously, this is going to affect low-income people. People who have the money can go out of state.
Yeah.
And it's not going to affect them at all. This is going to damage, you know, people who are teenage mothers or people who are low income and who really can't afford to have another child. And obviously it's going to have an impact on their bodies and their lives and their finances and their futures in all kinds of negative ways. But that shouldn't really even matter. The point is that they should have the right to choose for themselves.
The right to choose, yeah.
As the vast majority of people believe that in the US. It's not even outside of white evangelical Protestants. Every other group, the majority believe that abortion should be legal in all or most cases.
It's kind of weird because that's the, you know, the it's not that long ago. Well, actually, it's only 2 years ago, something like that, that the Republic of Ireland voted that abortion would be legal, or, you know, after a certain amount of time and all that kind of stuff. So there were people that would travel to England from the Catholic country of Ireland to get abortions, even up to the 2018, I want to say, 2019. And we here are thinking, well, that's just barbaric, you know. And England were kind of going, yeah, well, of course you can have it whenever you like, you know, it's your choice, and it's barbaric that you don't get a choice. So to hear that, you know, white evangelical Protestants, which is ostensibly what the Church of England are, well, not the white and the
white, but not evangelical.
The evangelical, yeah. I don't know. It's that weird thing. I mean, what is it that what's at the heart of it?
I mean, the Catholics in the US, 55% of American Catholics say that abortion should be legal in all or most cases.
Yeah. So there you go. So it's mad, doesn't it? You kind of what is the problem? Is it the white fear of being, you know, outnumbered by non-whites that is propelling this in Texas? What is it?
It is control of women.
Right. Just that. Okay.
Keep them barefoot and pregnant, out of the workforce, and doing what we tell them.
And it's not like the state is going to support them. It's not going to say, okay, look, if you have more kids, we'll give you more money.
Oh, absolutely not. Once the child's born, fuck them. They care about the birth, and to be honest, they don't care about avoiding abortions, because if they did, they would encourage birth control. They would not. They first of all in Texas, they don't mandate sex education.
Yeah.
But where schools do provide sex education, they do have to talk about abstinence. I mean, these are not the ways to avoid abortions.
No, and nor were they for the generation who are now the lawmakers. That's what I don't get. Where does that come from? Have they got to that point? They're going, well, we had it tough, so you can have it tough. Instead of, there's no progression going on. And what the actual fuck? You know, is it because they are still cowboys? You know, and that kind of uber masculine society where the men are men and the cows are scared.
The thing is, this is kind of a test case, which, I mean, Florida's already said they're going to be taking this as a template and basically running with it.
Yeah.
And obviously all of the red states with evangelical Protestant Republican governors are going to be doing a similar thing. And the thing is, the Supreme Court, the part of the rationale in saying why they did not enjoin this law and stop it from going into effect was saying that although there are, you know, strong arguments about the unconstitutionality of the law, there are also novel elements, by which they mean the enforcement of it by citizens, which make it a more complicated question, which is bullshit.
How does it make it complicated?
Because what they're essentially saying is, what you can do is create a law which is like, okay, we are banning guns of any kind, clearly unconstitutional, but we're going to enforce it by getting trained otters to come and collect all the guns from the homes. And the Supreme Court goes, well that's a complication. Mm, we can't
make a rule
strike
on that.
Down that.
Yeah, law. Yeah.
Because this is a thing we haven't come up against before. That's ridiculous. ridiculous. You can't just add an insane method of enforcement to a clearly unconstitutional law and then get
and
it...
And then say, oh, well, that's more than we can...
Make it acceptable.
Yeah, that's
in some
more
way.
Than we can handle. You know, right, it's just... What? Well, yeah. And yet they are big on human rights, apparently.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And small government, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
The bad... I mean, of all the many bad things, is that there is very little that can be done about this.
Yeah.
The House is looking at what can be done. Biden has said they're looking at what legal recourses they can use. They are investigating the process that it was undergone to make this happen.
Just leaving it.
But ultimately, without getting rid of the filibuster... There isn't going to be a thing that can be passed by the House and the Senate, because they won't get something through the Senate without either getting some Republican support, which they won't get, like significant Republican support, because if they have the filibuster, it needs to be a 60-40 split, which is not going to happen. So they need to get rid of the filibuster so they can make it a 50-50 decision and Kamala Harris can do the tiebreak. But Manchin and Sinema are... not happy about getting rid of the filibuster. They weren't for budget reconciliation. They weren't for passing basically anything that has come up over the last year, a lot of which has been pretty important. And there's no particular reason to assume that this is going to be different.
Yeah.
But that's the only way anything can be done about this, because the legal recourse is to go through the courts. Yeah. And while you are going through the courts, which will take years...
Yeah.
The law has been allowed to take place.
I mean, there's just something fundamentally at the... I mean, the next step will be to do away with women's ability to vote in Texas. That's all they need.
I mean, I don't see why not.
I mean, that's all they need to do, because the only people that are going to overthrow it in the Texan government is if women get to be in office. Surely. So they'll prevent that by keeping people poor and barefoot and pregnant and in the kitchen, and then remove the vote. Effectively, that's what they're moving to.
They are. Georgia and various other places are already working on significantly reducing your ability to vote. Especially if you're poor and, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just, it is extremely upsetting, frankly.
Yeah.
And that's for us. It's upsetting for middle-aged cis white male guys in Britain.
Yeah.
So fuck me how upsetting it must be for people actually in Texas who are affected directly by this shit.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable that the machinations that Mitch McConnell went through to get the court stacked with conservative justices has led to something like this.
Yeah.
I mean, unbelievable yet inevitable in a way. And just fucking depressing.
Yeah. And you think, to what end? And the only way out, you know, they'll all die, but they'll all die of old age, and that'll, you know, that's decades in the future. They made sure of that.
It's a long game. Yeah. That's the problem.
Yeah. And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
Well, the Arizona election audit is finally done, and the GOP-led Arizona Senate has hired someone to verify the results. Naturally, to avoid the appearance of impropriety, they looked for someone truly bipartisan, respected on both sides of the political spectrum, with an unimpeachable record of honesty and integrity. And that went about as well as the search for a new host of Jeopardy. Apparently, the best man for the job is Dr. Shiva Ayyadurai. Or to give him his full medical title, Shiva Ayyadurai. He's an anti-vax election fraud conspiracy theorist, two-time Senate race loser who claims he lost one of those due to Massachusetts destroying a million ballots voting for him, who called Anthony Fauci a deep state operative, claimed that vitamin C cures COVID, and claims he invented email in 1979, which probably came as quite a shock to Ray Tomlinson, who sent the first email 8 years earlier in 1971. Local Republican data analyst Benny White said, "I don't know why it is that Senator Fan goes out of her way to find unqualified people to do this work. It might be that she's looking for a particular result." Yeah, could be.
We've often said that the right find it hard doing humour. And equally impossible to spot irony, even when legally bound to not believe a word he says, Tucker Carlson is flattening your face with it turned up to maximum heat. Not satisfied with fully backing the state-sanctioned interference in Texans' women's rights over their own bodies on his Fox News show, in the very next breath, he decried the Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus R. Vance Jr.'s announcement that charges were being brought against 15 people over a conspiracy to forge COVID-19 vaccine cards and fraudulently enter unvaccinated people into New York's vaccination database. According to the DA's office, 13 of the people charged for buying the bogus cards are believed to work in frontline and essential employee settings, including hospitals and nursing homes. Yeah, let's put others' health first, eh, guys? Carlson, who, remember, told you to call the cops on parents making their kids wear masks, spluttered that this is not a serious crime. In good conscience, they've risked their careers to preserve their rights to bodily autonomy, and now they're in jail for that. Yeah, he did say that. Again, no hint of irony from the safety of a show you are legally bound to not believe a word of, as well as from inside the safety of a healthy, wealthy, privileged, white, male body. Oh yeah, self-awareness, that's the other thing the right doesn't do.
The House panel investigating the January 6th insurrection have sent a request to telecommunications companies to preserve records from January 6th related to certain redacted individuals. Certain Republican individuals have reacted like totally innocent people with nothing to hide, such as House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, who lied on Twitter that handing over such information would violate a federal law he totally could name if he wanted, he was just choosing not to, and that should they do so, a Republican majority will not forget. Meanwhile, screeching racist Marjorie Taylor Greene screeched at Tucker Entertainment Purposes Only Carlson that if the telecommunications companies go along with it, they will be shut down, and that's a promise. It's a threat that's hard to take seriously, given MTG has just about the least power of any congressperson, seeing as how her inability to go 2 days without screeching some bigoted batshit conspiracy meant that she had all her committee assignments taken away within a month of taking office. Finally, we have Mo Brooks, who tweeted, "Why not subpoena socialists who support BLM and Antifa?" You've got to hand it to Mo. It's pretty hard to sound both panicky and desperate in a tweet while also missing the point by that much.
Excellent. Ivermectin is really difficult to get these days. Like hydroxychloroquine before it, crikey, if you don't actually need it, it's getting pricey. Yeah, bleach, not so much, admittedly, but sheep paste? Jeepers, where will anti-vaxxers get their hands on enough to pay for that? Well, never fear, the creative, if a little foggy and fucked up minds of big pharma bad conspiratorialists have found a way. Sperm will be the new gold. Or if that's not valuable enough, the new Bitcoin. Yep, convinced that the combined efforts of Bill Gates, George Soros and Hugo Chavez's magnetic 5G vaccine will alter your actual DNA. You won't. Pure, unadulterated semen is going to be worth a fortune. It isn't. Well, at least amongst the wankers who believe this stuff. No, even then, no. Overjoyed at the prospect of fistfuls of the white stuff coming on stream, one poster to the now quarantined subreddit post No New Normal wrote, "I'm going to retire as a cum cow." Tiny cow emoji. Okay, not satisfied with confusing how his own DNA works, he doesn't even know how bovine DNA-owning cattle work, vis-a-vis bulls and heifers and, like, cows and shit. Apart from an unhealthy concentration on the value of his own ejaculate, that's the other thing that tells me he doesn't get out much.
The FDA has finally fully approved the Pfizer vaccine, thereby removing one more excuse for anti-vaxxers who pretend their objection is science-based, like Texas Governor Greg Abbott, for example, whose July executive order said, "No governmental entity can compel any individual to receive a COVID-19 vaccine administered under an emergency use authorization." So now that it's fully approved, we're cool, right, Greg? No, he immediately signed a new order which removed the emergency use bit, leading cynical old me to think that maybe it was never about the vaccine's FDA status. Meanwhile, companies around the US are taking the opportunity to mandate vaccines for their employees, but Delta Airlines have gone a different route, instead requiring unvaccinated employees to pay $200 a month extra for additional health insurance. CEO Ed Bastian pointed out that the average COVID-related hospital stay costs $50,000 and that since the rise of the B.1.612.2 variant, all Delta employees who have been hospitalised with COVID were not fully vaccinated. That's weird. I wonder why he didn't just call it the Delta variant like everyone else. Oh, yeah, I know. I see it now.
We covered the marvellous Judge Linda Parker in a previous Is Not a Logical Fallacy when she handled the so-called Kraken lawsuits. I say marvellous because honourable just doesn't seem enough of an honorific. As we suspected, judgment has been passed on the frankly shite lawyering carried out by the nine never mind asking questions or like legal checking and that. Just look how many lawsuits there are because, no smoke without fire. Legal eagles / unabashed Trump allies. They have been ordered between them to stump up for the entire hearing costs incurred by the state of Michigan and the city of Detroit, and also literally told to go back to school. Each of them ordered to receive 12 hours of legal education, six of which will focus specifically on election law. They could also face possible further action in the individual states in which they practice. It's like the moment at the end of any legal drama when you leap to your feet, a whooping and a hollering because the good guys won, ground the opposition into the dirt and upheld the rule of law and the truth. I suspect David Fink, a lawyer for the city of Detroit, was similarly whooping when he told NPR, "In 43 years of practice, I have never seen a group of attorneys sanctioned so severely. But I've also never seen a group of attorneys who deserved to be sanctioned as much as these lawyers deserved it." Adding, "This decision sends a message to attorneys all around the country that the rules matter and the truth matters, and there are consequences for bad behaviour. Are you listening, Rudy?"
It's time to get out the tiny violins for America's most punchable neo-Nazi, and that's a competitive category, Richard Spencer. According to the New York Times, Spencer, who is facing a trial next month for his role in the 2017 Charlottesville march that led to the death of Heather Heyer, is not doing so great. His wife has divorced him, his organisation has dissolved, he's been very effectively shunned by the Rocky Mountain community where he was living, well done Whitefish, Montana, and he's broke, leading his lawyer to drop him as a client just before his trial, where he'll now be representing himself. We did the Just World fallacy a couple of weeks ago, and we already know that bad things don't always happen to bad people. I mean, look at Trump. But it's nice to know that sometimes life takes a giant shit on the worst asshole around.
Meanwhile, in Britpol, when you spend a fortnight editing films about the surprising human rights breakthroughs being made in the Pacific Rim, and it makes you think, perhaps living in the Philippines might be nice, looks quite equitable, fair and just. You know something's gone wrong in England's green and pleasant land. Boris today, when asked by Keir Starmer, not unreasonably, if a little cheekily prefaced, "Given that we have turned our back on Europe and had the US turn their back on us," he might have added, "withdrawn millions of funding to the poorest in the global south, as well as reneging on 20 years of peace, stability and rights building in Afghanistan. Given all that," he continued, "can the PM give me one example of where in the world we have extended our influence?" He doesn't need to add much vaunted in the sunny post-Brexit uplands of Albion. To which Boris replied very specifically, all over the place, or something very much like it, because he was hard to catch amidst the gales of laughter at his expense. Elsewhere, arch-Brexiteer and electrified meat scarecrow, Wetherspoon's pub chain owner Tim Martin, blamed the lack of beer in all his pubs variously on a delivery truck driver's strike that didn't actually happen and a weirdly unforeseen shortage of European workers and an increased border bureaucracy. He, like all right-wingers, conspiracy theorists and Leave voters, can't wait for gyms to fully reopen in order to perfect the punishingly torturous mental gymnastics they go through to avoid seeing the catastrophic £7 billion sterling disaster they so xenophobically shot into their own foot. That Rodrigo Duarte suddenly seems such a reasonable chap.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this week. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com. And if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. If you had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump, just like our newest patrons, Tash Pine and Amar Subramanian. Our strawman level patrons, Max Beaver, Kaz Tui, Steve Bickle, Schmutz, Mark Reiki, and Amber R. Buchanan, and our top True Scotsman level patron, Lauren. Thank you so much, everyone. We really do appreciate your support.
You can connect with those awesome people as well as us and other listeners in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/FallaciousTrump.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.